It's a hotline, and welcome to the show. Dave Naylor covers the CFL for TSN. How are you doing this morning, Nails?
Very well, JR. Good to join you.
Good to have you on. Thanks a lot for doing it. Well, I know you've been on the station here and there over the last little bit, and the reason I wanted to bring you on is I saw the comments that Glenn Suter, who does the TV broadcast for TSN, made on the Sports Cage a couple of days ago about the lack of transparency with the Canadian Football League as this process unfolds. And, you know, him saying, look, the league is just, you know, my take on his take is the league's got to do a better job at communicating what's going on, even if there's nothing going on. Do you think that's valid criticism?
You know, I do, and I also understand why. Like, I think historically in the Canadian Football League, for a nine-team league, it's been hard to get nine teams to agree on anything. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think we don't get more in communication. If three teams think one way and six think another, it's hard to go for the commissioner to go out and represent the league's view on something, especially if it's an issue that hasn't been decided, say, like when to start the season. So I think that's one of the things that sort of handicaps his ability to get out and sort of be more forthright. And then you throw in the context of an ever-changing situation. And I think that makes them very cautious as well to sort of flag which direction they're going. And, I mean, I think I just used the current situation right now that, you know, I don't know what you guys, I did not see, you know, full-blown April lockdown coming. You know, if we were back in February or March when people would have wanted the league to indicate where they thought things were going. So I think that's the other part of it that makes it very difficult. But I did read Glenn's comments, and I know that his frustration is not unique to him. Certainly when you talk to people who's, you know, getting paid this season depends on that, and I'm talking about players and you know, to some degree, coaches. So anybody who's a stakeholder, you know, who's living in some ways is going to depend on the Canadian Football League. You know, I think feels that sentiment very much so. I think it really is just the nature of, you know, like asking any of your listeners, what are you doing for vacation in the first week of July? You know, it's really, I don't mean to dumb it down, but that's really a lot of what this comes to.
Yeah, fair enough, for sure. To the best of your knowledge, what is the plan for the Canadian Football League for the 2021 season as we sit here on April the 15th?
I think the thing they've got to decide is, are we prepared to play without fans in stands at any point in the season? I don't think they want to play an entire season without fans in stands, but I don't think anybody thinks that an entire season is going to go by without that. But again, we don't know for sure. I think the thing they've got to determine, and determine soon, is, are we prepared to do that, you know, at least for, you know, a period of weeks? And I think what they're struggling with right now is how to give, look, we know the season's not going to start on time. Okay. They haven't announced that, but like, anybody you talk to in the league will tell you the season's not starting on time. Everyone knows that. So why haven't they announced it yet then? I think the reason is that, and they've been saying this going back to last fall, that they did not want to sort of set the season adrift like they did a year ago, right? Where it went on and on. It was dependent on government and deadlines that were reported in the media came and went. I think they wanted to avoid that scenario. So I think they're waiting until they can get a little more clarity on what they want to do, and that when you see an announcement about the season being delayed, you'll also get some stronger indication, hopefully, of where we go from here. And that's been something we've been hearing, you know, all through the winter and through the spring. So what is the plan? I don't know. But I think what it comes down to is, you know, what percentage of the stadiums need to be open for us to play? Or to what degree are we prepared to play without empty stadiums? And, you know, trying to make a forecast based on that. I think if you give the stakeholders, you know, this is our plan, this is what we're willing to do, this is what we're not willing to do. Not everybody might be happy with the answer, but you know, that's what I think's got to come. And I don't know that they've determined it yet. Those are the issues around which they've got to decide that plan.
To your knowledge, is there unanimity? Do all the teams, all nine teams and ownership groups, which vary from individuals to community ownership, do they all agree on how this, you know, should play out in terms of, you know, we can't start the season without fans at every game to we can play half a season with fans at games? Do all the ownership groups in their varying ways, do they all agree on that part?
I don't know that to be true. I think they all agree that there's an urgency to play this year. And, you know, they may have agreed to that last year, but we keep hearing that there's more of a recognition that missing a second season, what that would mean to the brand, to the sponsors, to the fans. So I think there's more on board with that. What you're getting at is the question of what's the pain threshold that every team is willing to sustain. I mean, that's what you're talking about, right? Everyone's had this thing all year. What's the plan for, you know, there is no plan that's going to replace fans in the stands. I mean, you just can't invent a revenue stream to replace your biggest revenue stream. Otherwise, you would already have that revenue stream. So there is no sort of alternate plan. It really comes down to what's the pain threshold, you know? When you actually do the numbers and you look at, you know, government wage subsidies that you can get and things that are accessible in programs, and are the Players Association going to be willing to take a haircut on games without fans in stands? Do you have other stakeholders that are willing to contribute? When you put it all down, what's the pain threshold that is the common denominator that every team can live with? And I don't know that they're there. And I think along the road, there's been varying degrees of pain threshold that teams have been willing to accept. But that's the trick. Finding the common denominator in that, and then, you know, moving forward with that. And I think that's what they've been doing all week, and I think that's what we're likely to learn about sometime next week.
Speaking with Dave Naylor from the CFL on TSN. Dave, I've seen a rash of player retirement announcements from CFL right. players, some of whom I've heard of and some of whom I haven't. What is the reasoning? Is there a common denominator on why players are retiring at this stage when a season is, well, not necessarily around the corner, but at least appears to be on track to happening at some point?
Yeah, I've talked to a few of the players involved in that and some of their representatives just to get a sense of it. And not so much the ones this week or so, the last week or so, but ones previous to that. And there wasn't really a direct correlation. Like, a lot of them came right after the 20%. Request to play 20% less for games without fans and stands. And there was a sense that that was the trigger that pushed these guys over the edge. And in that case, that wasn't what I found. It was more the overall process. You know, the fact that some guys, it was, you know, their bodies, you know, not playing football in a year and a half, as much as that's good for rest, it also kind of puts your body in a challenging position to get back to it. Other guys had invested in things and had gone on more deeply invested in things than they were a year ago just because of the uncertainty. Part of it is just the moving of the calendar. I mean, as we know, football is a sport where the average career is about 4 years. So if you go a year and a half without games, there's just, in the simple math, there's going to be guys that decide to move on. And I'm sure the uncertainty about when they're going to get paid and how much they're going to get paid has played into some of this. But, you know, maybe not as many of those as, you know, directly tied to the situation now as we went through with the kind of the initial thing I found. That said, I have had players who said to me, I think there's a lot of unannounced retirements, like guys who've decided, you know what, I'm 90% done with this, we'll see what happens. Or, you know, if my current job that I'm far more invested in than I was a year ago continues to go well, and they tell me to come back and play football in August, I don't know, I'll have to see. I mean, we had some agents handicapped that as much as, you know, 30 or 40% of their guys he thought were sitting on the fence. Another agent told me it was about 10%. So I don't want to downplay the degree that this phenomenon may be happening, because there may be a lot more out there than, you know, we've just seen that have officially been announced.
You have written extensively, of course, about the overarching storyline, which is the potential merger or the joint league between the CFL and the XFL. What is the status of that right now?
Yeah, it's all quiet. I mean, one of the things that this story from the very start, you know, that this story did not leak ahead of time, which historically in the Canadian Football League, for a story of this magnitude, I mean, we should give them the Grey Cup from 2020 just for that. You know, and there hasn't been a lot come forward since then. I mean, I assume, and no one's told me this, but I can be pretty certain about it, that this thing is clammed up with non-disclosure agreements in every direction, right? Which is why it's very, very difficult to get information. And there's not a lot leaking from the U.S. side either. I just continue to reiterate that I think they are exploring, you know, all the options. And that doesn't mean they're going to get there and form a merged league, but I think they're looking at what a merged league would look like. I think that one of the things they're trying to understand, for instance, is, you know, the implications of you know, a legalized gambling environment and the advantage of having, you know, an 18-team league in that kind of environment as opposed to a 9-team league in that kind of environment. I think there are explorations about, you know, global visions that would be, you know, beyond the first couple steps of a league like this. And they're just trying to figure out, you know, what a schedule would look like, how things would, you know, I don't think they're at the details of the rules and those kind of things yet from what I understand, but maybe. I mean, these talks, there's not a lot of, you know, details, but we do know that certainly at the presidential and the governor level, you know, there's a strong amount of engagement, and I certainly don't hear anything to suggest that this is, you know, coming off the rails or, or doesn't look good in any way, shape, or form either. So it's been very quiet. We just kind of wait to see, you know, where this is going.
All signs point toward, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen for the 2022 football season, which, you know, could start based on timelines as soon as something like next February or March. It doesn't seem to work for the Canadian weather, but regardless, sometime next spring. If that's the case, what is the timeline for getting an agreement to have an X/CFL season next year? Like, when would they have to announce that by, in your estimation?
Yeah, I don't know that the XFL-CFL season would necessarily be a 2022 play.
Okay.
And I've done some digging on this one, and I still hear people that say both, you know, or people that say, well, I'd have to hear why we're not doing it in 2022 if it's going to be 2023. And I think there are a few reasons for that. You know, one of them, frankly, may still be the pandemic to some degree. I mean, if I was launching a league, and I don't know this, but if I was launching a league, I might want to launch it a little beyond, you know, the tail end of the pandemic. You tell me what next February is going to be like. I don't know. but I might be, you know, a little more optimistic about things not getting in my way if I launched in 2023. And that's just me talking. No one has said that to me. I'm just thinking out loud on that one. But I think the other thing someone pointed out to me is, first of all, I don't think we're going to be playing February in any situation. I think, you know, kind of March, late March, mid-March, maybe sort of an earlier date. I've never heard anyone suggest to me there's going to be games, you know, in Winnipeg and Regina in February. So that's one thing. And then if you look at the last incarnation of the XFL, and I know it's different because it's different ownership and things like that, but their last coach was hired about 10 months before their kickoff. Well, do the math right now. If CFL XFL were going to play in March next year, we're 11 months away. You think they're going to have 8 coaches hired within a month? I don't think so. And that doesn't mean they have to. I'm just showing, just based on the way the timeline that was rolled out for the XFL last time, it was not a hurried venture. And I don't know, you know, everything I know about, I've been just, you know, doing a little digging into Jerry Cardinale and Alex Shiner, the people that run the Redbird Capital. And if you look at kind of their ventures, they're very calculated. I mean, they said they did, you know, 4 years of research on European soccer teams, you know, of, you know, 9 leagues in 13 countries and 80 clubs before they bought one. That doesn't sound like a group of people that want to sort of, you know, do something in a hurried manner. So, again, these are educated guesses that I'm, you know, looking at the whole situation. And if I was to guess right now, I think it may be more likely a 2023 play. But that begs the question, of course, well, what are we going to do in 2022?
Right, yeah.
And that one, I don't know. I mean, I've heard ideas tossed out like, well, do you play the 2022 season with the 9 teams of the CFL, but with if the new rules are decided by then, that you play that league that year, the 9 teams, just with the new rules. That's a spitballing comment, but, you know, I've heard it from somebody, I don't think that's determined, but I would be surprised if the XFL-CFL venture is a go for 2022, but I wouldn't rule it out either. I think I believe it's undetermined.
All right, last one for you. There's a report out from Canadian Press that the CFL has gone to the federal government looking for an interest-free loan, and according to the CP report, was turned down. I don't know if you have any additional reporting on that. If that is indeed the case, what impact does that have, if any?
Zero. And here's why. I'm not sure on the formality of the request from the Canadian Football League this time around, but we've been reporting this, that the conversation with the federal government never stopped. You know, they may have intensified a little bit in the last couple of months, but it wasn't like, you know, they went away and then knocked at the door and said, hey, we're back. Here's our request for another $30 million request. And the other point of it is, you know, and again, in conversations with people in the teams in the league throughout the winter, throughout the spring, nobody was hanging on this. Like there was, when I, when the formula of how this season would come together was kind of expressed to me, from multiple sources, it was kind of blah, blah, blah. And if the federal government, helps us, then great. That was kind of the way, rather than, well, we'll have to wait and see if the federal government's going to be able to help us to have a season, which was last year. So I think the impact of this and frankly, kind of the response to this is the impact is minimal. The response is probably overblown. It just wasn't something that anybody was counting on. Right. And I think there are still ways the federal government can help by directing the CFL through its various programs, which is exactly what they did a year ago. And they have helped. Like, I think it's a bit of a myth that the federal government hasn't helped the CFL at all, but it's not going to be in the form, as you say, of a giant interest-free check.
All right. Good stuff. Good to get caught up on the latest. You will keep on it for the CFL on TSN at tsn.ca. Always appreciate the time, Dave.
Thanks. Great, all right. Great talk to you, Jerry.
All right. Talk to you soon. There's